أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، بارئ الخلائق أجمعين، باعث الأنبياء والمرسلين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا وشفيع ذنوبنا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد، وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المكرمين المنتجبين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين روحي وأرواح العالمين لتراب مقدمه الفداء، ولعنت الله على أعدائهم أجمعين إلى قيام يوم الدين. For the hastening and the return of our Imam, let's recite a salawat. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه. So we were discussing the chapter that is titled باب بدء الأذان والإقامة و فضلهما وثوابهما, the chapter on the beginning of Adhan and Iqama, and the value of the two and their rewards. I believe we arrived at hadith number 5, which reads, first starting with the chain of transmission, Muhammad ibn Ismail. We said this is one of Sheikh Kulaini's teachers, obviously narrates from him, but he's a known teacher. He's not someone that is unknown. And at least what I mean by known mostly is that Sheikh Kulaini, whom we know as a very reputable scholar of hadith, refers to him as his teacher. Today, if you have a reputable scholar that refers to another person as their teacher, and they quote them relying on that quote, you understand that they are verifying that that person is not only reliable, but beyond that. And so that's what we understand from this. Muhammad ibn Ismail is a direct teacher of Sheikh Kulaini, and he didn't narrate one or two hadith, a number of hadith, in a book that Sheikh Kulaini says in the intro that I have only compiled what I trust and I worship God based on these. So, the other person we have, Anil Fadl ibn Shadhan, he's a very well-known figure of the area and region of Khurasan. He's a reliable. An Hammad ibn Isa, we had him a number of times as well, reliable. An Hariz an Zurara, that's Hariz ibn Abdullah Sajistani, we spoke of him, Zurara, the well-known companion of Imam al-Baqir and Imam al-Sadiq. An Abi Ja'farin, from Imam al-Baqir, salamullah alayhi, in this case, qal, Zurara says, in other words, that is the translation of qal, Zurara qal, Imam al-Baqir qala, Imam al-Baqir said, Ya Zurara, taftatihu al-adhan بأربع تكبيرات وتختمه وتفتتح الأذان بأربع تكبيرات وتختمه بتكبيرتين وتهليلتين. O Zurara, you should begin the Adhan with four takbir and end it with two takbir and two tahleel. Two Allahu Akbar, that's called takbir, and tahleel is saying La ilaha illallah. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, which is at the beginning of the adhan, is called tashahud, and it's shahadatain. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah. Of course, in the adhan, it's ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah, ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah. That's the tashahud, saying shahada. Tashahud means saying shahada. In the prayer, if what is said in the second rak'ah after sitting, after the second sajda of the second raka'ah, we call that tashahud, or some at least call it, it's referred to in Rasalas as tashahud, although it consists of not only tashahud. You say, ashhadu an la ilaha, the wajib part is ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, wahdahu la sharika lahu, wa ashhadu anna muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluh, Allahumma salli ala muhammadin wa ali muhammad. The salawat there is part of the tashahud. Some of those words, according to some of the maraja, are not necessary to say. Meaning, for example, أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له. Some say you don't have to say that exact wording. It's testifying to the oneness of God. Of course, the common wording, I think across the board, all Muslimin, is أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له. But perhaps, maybe, there are views. I've seen one of the Marajah particularly saying that that specific wording of the testimony to the oneness of God is not necessary. What is necessary is testifying to the oneness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Whether it's that exact wording or slightly different. But anyway, testifying to the oneness of God and to the prophethood of our Prophet, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. It's called tashahud because of those two. That's called taghlib, naming something which consists and is composed of different elements, putting the name of part of those elements over the whole thing. That's called taghlib. Okay, so although it doesn't consist of only shahadatain, the two shahadat, it is referred to as tashahud, although it contains some, consists of something else. Anyhow, tashahud, as I believe we will have in the hadith that will come, means the testimony. The testimony refers to, when you say ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, that's a testimony. At the end of adhan, the imam says, takhtimuhu, you end it bi takbiratain, you say Allahu Akbar twice, and tahleelatain, tahleel is saying la ilaha illallah. So you say la ilaha illallah twice at the end of adhan. At one point here, the last hadith we ended with in the previous session was Al-Adhan. I won't read the chain of transmission. Those who've been with us since last week, they can refer to their notes. It said Al-Adhan mathna, mathna, wal-iqamah mathna, mathna. Mathna means two and two. They're pairs, okay? Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, that would be a pair. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, that's a pair. Now, when we were reading that hadith, we said, this hadith does not suggest that every line in the adhan and every line in the iqama is two and two or pairs. Okay, that's not what it's suggesting. It's suggesting against what some people are doing, which is in the iqama to only do one ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. They no longer have pairs for the most of it, for the majority of it. That's not correct. It's pairs. It's two and two. Okay, now the point we're trying to make here is, if someone were to go to that hadith and say, oh, everybody is doing the adhan wrong. Why? Because the hadith says, al-adhan mathna mathna. Okay, you shouldn't say Allahu Akbar four times at the beginning of adhan, because that's not mathna. That's ruba', that's saying four and four. There's no and four, there's only one four, one set of four, which is takbir. But anyhow, if you had another set, that would be called ruba'. Mathna wa thulatha wa ruba', the Quran says. Mathna means two and two, thulath means three and three, ruba' means four and four. But definitely, if you have four and then you have two, you don't say mathna, you say that's ruba', this is mathna, the two and two is. So anyone to go to that hadith and say, oh, it's saying mathna, so you can't start with four. Or at the end of iqama, you say one tahleel, you say la ilaha illallah, you end the iqama. Someone were to go, oh, the hadith says mathna, so at the end the tahleel needs to be double as well. This is referring to hadith and taking things out of context. What is taking out of context is anything that does not consider relevant hadith on the same topic would be out of context. More importantly, anything that does not consider verses that are in the same context or regarding the same theme and topic, if they are not considered, if the verses are not considered, and then we only want to look at those hadith, that is taking it out of context and misinterpreting. Taking anything out of context would be leading to misinterpretation and misunderstanding. So this was a clear example. It's just going, if you don't go to the next hadith, you'll end up, and you never look at it, you can misinterpret. But the next hadith makes it very clear. Adhan starts with four takbir. And of course, we had the other hadith that talked about how many lines each of the adhan and the iqama was. Said it's 35, 18 for adhan, 17 for iqama. When you put all of these together, you get to that number and you realize that at the end of the iqama, there's only one tahleel. You say la ilaha illallah once. So mathna, mathna is generally, it's two and two. For adhan and iqama, both of them, it's generally two and two. At the beginning of adhan, there's one exception. At the end of iqama, there's one exception. Everything else is two and two. this general rule of those two is that wording can be used to refute what? To refute the four at the beginning? No, to refute those who have taken the pairs, the times that you need to do two and two, they have taken them and just made them one and one. No, it's got to be two and two. That's what the Imam is trying to suggest. Anyhow, moving on to the next hadith, hadith number 6, Ali ibn Ibrahim an Muhammad ibn Isa an Yunus an Muawiyah ibn Wahb. This is a great chain of transmission. This is Muhammad ibn Isa an Yunus. I'll come back to Yunus. I've mentioned Yunus a number of times. This is Yunus ibn Abdul Rahman. He is apparently Basri or Basrawi, as some say. He's from the city of Basra in Iraq. And his student is Muhammad ibn Isa. This Muhammad ibn Isa is not the father of Ahmad ibn Muhammad ibn Isa al-Ash'ari al-Qummi. This is Muhammad ibn Isa ibn Ubaid. Okay. And they refer to him as Muhammad ibn Isa al-Yunusi because he's such a disciple and student so close to Yunus ibn Abdul Rahman. And he narrates from him so frequently, he's referred to as al-Yunusi. So this is Muhammad ibn... I will come back to Yunus ibn Abdul Rahman, why we keep mentioning his name. I think I've mentioned it before, but since we have another person that's related to the one of the contexts in which Yunus shines from amongst the companions of the imams of his time, it's nice to know, and we'll mention that when we get to that hadith. Anyhow, Muawiyah ibn Wahb is also a well-known good companion of Imam al-Sadiq. قال سألت أبا عبد الله عليه الصلاة والسلام. I asked Imam al-Sadiq صلوات الله وسلامه عليه عن التثويب. Tathweeb, now I haven't looked at the dictionaries and traced the word. How in the world does it refer to what it refers to? Why is what I'm about to, what is tathweeb? Okay, I'll explain what it is. But why did they choose this word? I haven't done the research. I don't know. And I'm not Arab to perhaps know naturally or to be able to figure it out naturally. I would have to do research to understand that. But anyhow, it's clear that a tathweeb is saying as-salatu khayrun min an-nawm. In the Iqama, I believe, from my recollection, obviously I'm not an expert on the fiqh of other Islamic schools of thought, the Hanafi or Shafi'i or Hanbali or Maliki or other, because each of those also has various views. For the Shia, they generally don't know. There are various Maliki scholars that each have their own opinion that they differ on cases or on matters with Imam Malik, Malik ibn Anas, or Hanafis who differ with Abu Hanifa on matters, or generally scholars that they have that. So I'm not an expert on that fiqh, so based on what I have heard in my encounters with in Hajj, for instance, from my recollection, it's in the Iqama, but I could be wrong. Anyhow, saying tathweeb. Now here it says in the adhan or the iqama. Perhaps it's at least at times maybe in both of them. Anyhow, tathweeb is saying as-salatu khayrun min an-nawm. Muawiyah ibn Wahb qal sa'altu. He said, I asked Imam al-Sadiq salamullah alayhi an at-tathweeb regarding this. Okay, this is Imam al-Sadiq, this is Muawiyah ibn Wahb. A little bit of background. The time of Imam al-Sadiq is where a larger number of people are becoming more familiar with the Ahlul Bayt and more familiar with the various teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, including the fiqh. In fact, Zurara ibn A'yan that we had in the previous hadith is actually a revert in a sense. And his family is a revert from Christianity. His grandfather, his name is Zurara ibn A'yan ibn Sunsun. His grandfather Sunsun was Christian. They became Muslim, and then Zurara and his brothers, they became Shia at the time of Imam al-Baqir, salamullah alayhi. Abdul Malik, Zurara, Bukair, these few brothers, they all became Shia during that time. They're not the only ones, there are many. So there's a certain way of doing things that is common in the Muslim world, in Masjid al-Nabi in Medina, in Masjid al Haram in Mecca, in the various general mosques, people see adhan, they hear adhan, they see prayer in that context. When they come to the Ahlul Bayt, they realize that there are things that the Ahlul Bayt know that the public is oblivious to, or they have never heard, or they've been kept in the dark, or whatever you want to call it. And so they come and ask these questions. There's many times. So Muawiyah ibn Wahb has come and he asked Imam al-Sadiq salamullah an al-tathweeb. He hears, they're saying, and he's probably heard something about it, because otherwise, if he was clueless about anything being said about from the Ahlul Bayt regarding the matter, he wouldn't be asking the question, well, why pick on a tathweeb? Why not pick on something else? Why not, I don't know, tahleel being done once at the end of... He's probably heard something. Now he's checking with the imam, which is an important thing to do. He says, سألت أبا عبد الله عليه الصلاة والسلام عن التثويب regarding الصلاة خير من النوم في الأذان والإقامة, saying that in أذانه. The response of the imam is very important, very important. And this relates to the discussion we had last week in regards to we talked about this. We talked about as-salatu khayrun min an-nawm, or anything. You cannot add anything to the adhan or aqama. You just can't. Okay? Then, therefore, we said, if anybody says as-salatu khayrun min an-nawm, considering it part of the adhan or aqama, then they are wrong. They have deviated from the path of Islam. And if anyone says anything else other than these, as part of the adhan or aqama, clearly they have deviated from the path of the Prophet or Islam. أشهد أن علي ولي الله وأشهد أن علي حجة الله, or whatever other wording you choose to mention the shahada or the testimony to the wilaya of Amir al-Mu'mineen and by extension the rest of the imams, that is not considered part of the adhan or iqama by any of the ulama, Shia ulama throughout time. It's never been considered part of the adhan or iqama. It's about whether to say it or not to say it. Is it good? Is it not good? But those who say it is good, and generally now, as we mentioned in the last session, most of the ulama say that it is very good to say it, but it's not part of the adhan or iqama. While it's not part of the adhan or iqama. Now, we said if people say as-salatu khayrun min an-nawm, they don't consider it part of the adhan or iqama. They're just making a statement, which of course we will tell them then, you know, isn't that stating the obvious and stating an obvious fact that doesn't really have a justification to mention? أَشْهَدُ أَنَّ عَلِيًا وَلِيُّ اللَّهِ وَأَشْهَدُ أَنَّ عَلِيًا حُجَّةُ اللَّهِ is testifying to an element that's within the Qur'an. There's no as-salatu khayrun min an-nawm in any part of the Qur'an. It's the Qur'an or the words of the Prophet have never compared salah to something like nawm. Salat has been compared to the other wajibat of the religion, and it has been said to be amududdin. That's the comparison that's made. Not salah and something that not only is not part of the religion, but is something that, although it's a necessary part of life, but sleep in and of itself, there's nothing spiritual about it, nothing good about it. If you make the right intention, that's a different thing. But sleep in itself is nothing to it, nothing good or bad. So comparing them is not really something to say. Anyhow, but if somebody wants to chooses to say that in the adhan, in the iqama, we mentioned that. I don't want to reiterate that whole thing, but it was necessary to get to this point. The imam's language here is very interesting and important. This is one of the reasons why we say أَشْهَدُ أَنَّ عَلِيًا وَلِيُّ اللَّهِ وَأَشْهَدُ أَنَّ عَلِيًا حُجَّةُ اللَّهِ in adhan and iqama is not a problem as long as we do not intend them to be part of adhan or iqama. And once we don't intend that for reasons other than being part of adhan and iqama, it is very good to say them at that point. In a sense, completing the shahadatain. The next step of shahadatain is that, but God didn't put that next step in adhan or iqama, for whatever wisdom he knew. And we're not making it part of that either. But it's good to say in the context of adhan and iqama. What's that wording here that is part of the reason, not the reason, it's part of the reason? The imam says, قَالْ مَا نَعْرِفُهُ تَثْوِيب, it's done. He says, مَا نَعْرِفُهُ, we don't recognize it. As he is referred to in our books, the imams generally are sahib al-shari'ah, the one who is, in a sense, the one who possesses the Sharia. The Sharia is with the Imam. Every single detail in the Sharia of Islam, in the teachings of Islam, every single bit of it is with the Imam. When he says, مَا نَعْرِفُ, he says, this is not in Islam. But look at the language. The Imam doesn't say, it's haram to say this. You're committing a sin in saying this. Those people, Muslimin, who are saying it, doesn't say, he says, مَا نَعْرِفُهُ, this is not part of the Adhan or Iqamah. Of course, this helps with, as we said, this is part of it, in that, although it's not part of the Adhan or Iqamah, the Imam doesn't say, oh, it's haram for you to say this, to do it. مَا نَعْرِفُهُ, it's not part of the Adhan or Iqamah. Next hadith, Ali ibn Ibrahim an Abi an Hamad ibn Isa an Hariz an Zurara. Again, we have that chain of transmission that we've had a number of times. Qal qala Abu Ja'far alayhi salatu wasalam, Imam al-Baqir in this case, salamullah alayhi. He said, this time not as a question, the Imam is teaching Zurara. Idha adhanta fa'afsih bil alif wal ha. Let me explain this part and then translate. I don't know about explanation. I'll put out what I think. Literally, this is what it says. It says, when you do the adhan, إذا أذنت, فأفسح. أفسح, فصاحة, is to be proper and to pronounce. In this case, it's pronunciation. Sometimes فصاحة refers to the words used. You use proper and eloquent words. فصاحة is that. Here, it's talking about letters in adhan. So it's not my wording. It's me pronouncing words that God has already made. So it has to do with pronunciation. So when you're calling the adhan, afsah, pronounce properly bil alifi wal ha. When saying Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, there's a lot of alif, which it's... some refer to as Hamza, but it's the Alif. Or the Alif, which is Allah. Okay. Sometimes when you do it too quickly, Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar, or other ways, this is perhaps I didn't demonstrate where the Alif is not done right. If you don't do it right, if you rush through it, there are letters that you will miss. The Imam specifically focuses on alif and ha that perhaps were ones that were more frequently or could be missed and not pronounced right when the adhan is being called. The Imam says, afsah bil alif wal ha. And what I mean by properly, the Imam says, afsah, being fasih in this, fasaha, perhaps is more than just not doing it wrong, but do it nice, do it properly. Okay. Pronounce these letters correctly. Hayya 'ala salah. Hayya 'ala salah. Ha. Those are instances of ha. Okay. Pronounce them correctly. Afsah bi al alif wal ha. If I understood that correctly, this is my understanding. It's clearly talking about letters. I understand the alif, as I mentioned, and the ha, as I mentioned. Perhaps if there's anything wrong, inshallah, Allah forgives. And then the Imam says, وَصَلِّ عَلَى النَّبِيِّ كُلَّمَا ذَكَرْتَ أَوْ ذَكَرَهُ ذَاكِرٌ فِي أَذَانٍ وَغَيْرِهِ. And say a salawat, okay? صَلِّ is to say a salawat, or to send your salawat, your blessings, by asking God to send blessings, which is what we call salawat. So recite a salawat upon the Prophet every time you mention him, or ذَكَرَهُ ذَاكِرٌ, or someone else mentions him, fi adhanin وَغَيْرِهِ, during the adhan or outside of adhan. This is obviously... we understand what this means. So during the adhan, when the person who's calling the adhan, ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah, pause, say Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Is salawat part of the adhan? No. Part of the aqama? No. The Imam says, you hear, you say the Prophet's name after you say it in the adhan or otherwise in the aqama that's included. You recite Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. You do what the imam says. That's pretty clear. If someone else is calling the adhan and I'm listening, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad, recite salawat. If it's not adhan, someone mentions the Prophet's name or I mention the Prophet's name, the imam says salli alayhi. Recite a salawat for the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. This is one of the other, in addition to what it establishes in itself, it tells us that the ahadith that say, for instance, in the iqamah, you should not say anything in between the lines. It doesn't include the likes of salawat. The likes of salawat are excluded. And therefore, if there's something where there's a legitimate reason that connects what is being said to the tashahud, ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah in that case, something that connects it to that, it's allowed to be said. And the ones that say you should not say anything between the lines of iqama do not include the likes of that. And therefore, ashhadu anna aliyan waliyullah, ashhadu anna aliyan hujjatullah, can be and it's good to be said as part of the risala of the Prophet was to appoint Ali ibn Abi Talib as the wali, and according to the Quran, that is the completion of Islam. And so that's the connection between it and testifying to the prophethood of our Prophet. Hadith number 8, Anhu an Abi, refers to the previous hadith. It started with Ali ibn Ibrahim. From him, Ali ibn Ibrahim, an Abi, from his father, an Ibn Abi Umayr. We've had this a number of times as well. He's very reliable, very well known, a transmitter of hadith. An Hammad, which seems to be Hammad ibn Isa, if I remember correctly, but it could be Ibn Uthman as well. He narrates, from my recollection, he narrates from both. But either way, as we said, they're both reliable. An al-Halabi, which we said when it's a particular one, that session that we went over al-Halabi, the Halabi family generally, we said there's one of them that's well known. I couldn't remember the name. It's Ubaydullah al-Halabi. When it just says al-Halabi, it's referring to Ubaydullah. He's the most reliable and the one that is most found in the books of hadith, narrating hadith, but they're all reliable. An Abi Abdullah alayhi salatu wasalam, from Imam al-Sadiq salamullah alayhi, qal, the Imam said according to the hadith, إِذَا أَذَّنْتَ وَأَقَمْتَ صَلَّ خَلْفَكَ صَفَّانِ مِنَ الْمَلَائِكَةِ. If you say or pronounce the adhan and the iqama together, behind you will pray two lines of angels. وَإِذَا أَقَمْتَ, if you only do the iqama, صَلَّ خَلْفَكَ صَفٌ مِنَ الْمَلَائِكَةِ, behind you will form a line of angels, one line of angels in prayer. They will pray behind you, they will congregate behind you, only one line of angels. Obviously, this is to anyone that hears this, these are words of encouragement, encouraging when you get to know this. First of all, if you're by yourself and there's nobody praying behind you and there's so many rewards in congregational prayers, if you do the adhan and the iqama, you'll have two lines of angels standing behind you and you're performing a congregational prayer, and you'll get all that extra reward. And obviously, the comparison that's made there doesn't mean that if you can't do adhan and iqama both, then leave it, because sometimes people misunderstand. Like, oh, it's two lines when you do adhan and iqama, iqama is just one. And then when we get to doing it, when I don't feel like doing both adhan and iqama, I just leave the whole thing. Well, it says one line is formed if you do the iqama only. So if you have time, just do the iqama. You'll have at least one line of angels. But in comparison, when you have time for both, these words will give you that extra boost if you're feeling lazy. You have time, there's nothing you need to do. You just feel lazy in doing the adhan and the iqama. You remember these lines and you're encouraged to do adhan and iqama. Hadith number 9, Muhammad ibn Yahya, the other teacher of Shaykh al-Kulayni, عن أحمد ابن محمد عن الحسين ابن سعيد عن القاسم ابن محمد عن علي ابن أبي حمزة عن أبي بصير عن أحدهما. This chain of transmission has a couple of people that are a little on the iffy side, and some scholars have some issues from what I can point out, Al-Qasim ibn Muhammad. Now, Ali ibn Abi Hamza al-Battani is a horrible person towards the end of his life. He's the one that created, one of the ones who created the Waqifi movement. They went against Imam al-Ridha, they lied about Imam al-Kadhim not having passed and not having been poisoned and martyred in the prison. It's this person, Ali ibn Abi Hamza, that is al-Bata'ini. And his son helped him out in this as well, for a little bit of the hutam of the dunya, for a little bit of wealth to live a better, luxurious material life. Apparently, of course, in an apparent way it's better, but otherwise in actuality it's not better. Anyhow, he's one of those. So he's not a good person, but these ahadith were collected during the time that he was doing well. That's generally why they're accepted. Al-Qasim ibn Muhammad, if I remember correctly, this is Al-Qasim ibn Muhammad al-Jawhari. And I believe, at least, if I, again, I didn't check these because for reasons that I have mentioned before in these sessions, these are reliable hadith. I consider these reliable hadith. But in terms of the you know, knowing these facts, Qasim ibn Muhammad al-Jawhari might have been one of those who followed Ali ibn Abi Hamza al-Battani in the issue of waqf and going against Imam al-Ridha salamullahi alayhi. But he apparently was a follower, not one of the leaders of that. But the thing here is that you have al-Husayn ibn Sa'id al-Ahwazi, a very well-known companion. And they lived at that time, they knew these people, and if he's narrating hadith from him, he must have very clear reasons to do that. He knows them better than we do, and he is more careful in hadith than we are. If they narrate hadith from them, it must have been with clear clues that this is not something like them attributing lies to Imam al-Kadhim regarding his shahada, or calling Imam al-Ridha a liar, a'yadhu billah. Anyhow, so Ali ibn Abi Hamza narrates here an Abi Basir. Many of, if not actually the majority of hadith of Ali ibn Abi Hamza al-Battani, and this is the sad part about him. It says Ali ibn Abi Hamza an Abi Basir. Abu Basir was blind. We mentioned this kunya. According to at least the researchers, some of the teachers and scholars, Abu Basir, the father of the insightful, is a term or a kunya used for someone that does not have eyesight. This is commonly done. There's in Farsi, it's also done. Anyhow, I don't want to get into the linguistics. It refers to a person who's blind. So Abu Basir is not his kunya in terms of his son, but rather it's referring to his blindness. So he was blind. He needed someone to take him around. Who took him around? Ali ibn Abi Hamza al-Battani as a child. This hadith is from Imam an Ahadihima. Ahadihima refers to Imam al-Baqir and Imam al-Sadiq, salamullah alayhima. Abu Basir was a companion of those two imams. Ali ibn Abi Hamza, as a child, he was a companion of Imam al-Kadhim and became a representative of Imam al-Kadhim, and he lived through the time of Imam al-Ridha, salamullah alayhi. So at the time of Imam al-Sadiq and perhaps Imam al-Baqir, he was a child. Okay, as a child, he used to be with a close companion of these two imams, and because of that acquaintance, he received and learned a lot of hadith from him. And he went to the presence of, he experienced being in the presence of Imam al-Baqir, perhaps. I'm not 100% sure with Imam al-Baqir. Imam al-Sadiq, for sure. He went in his presence. Then Imam al-Baqir, then he became a representative of Imam al-Baqir, and then he, unfortunately, became one of the leaders of the Waqifi. A'yadhu billah, God protect us all. Anyhow, back to the hadith. This is definitely from one of those imams, either Imam al-Baqir, Imam al-Sadiq. He says, an ahadihima. We don't know which of the two imams. It's one of the imams. And kulluhum nurun wahid. They're all one light. It doesn't really matter in that sense. Qal, he says, sa'altu Abu Basir. I asked him, that imam, whichever of the two it is, ayujzi'u adhanun wahid. Can I just do one adhan? Now, initially, when you come across that, it may seem like we're talking about one adhan or more than one adhan. However, it becomes clear from what is said after this that it's saying, it's suggesting, is it enough to just do adhan, that one adhan, no iqama? It's as though adhan and iqama are two, okay? Although they're not the same thing, but they're pretty much the same thing. There's some very slight differences. And so the one, is the one sufficient? That's the question. قال, the Imam responded by saying the following, إِن صَلَّيْتَ جَمَاعَةً لَمْ يُجْزِئْ إِلَّا أَذَانٌ وَإِقَامَةٌ. If you're praying in a congregation, you should do both. It's not sufficient to just do adhan. You should do adhan and iqama, both of them together. Then, وَإِن كُنْتَ وَحْدَكَ, if it's only you, you're doing the prayers by yourself, تُبَادِرُ أَمْرًا تَخَافُ أَن يَفُوتَكَ, and you're rushing, you're trying to get to a matter that you're afraid you're going to lose that, you're not going to get to, I don't know, an appointment, something important that you need to cater to, and because of that, your time is limited, okay? So you're praying by yourself, and there's something important, so you're limited, you're pressed for time. In that case, يُجْزِئُكَ إِقَامَةٌ, not adhan, don't do adhan. If you're pressed for time, you want to do one of the two, don't do adhan, do iqama, okay? Then the Imam says, إِلَّا الْفَجْرُ وَالْمَغْرِبُ, except for the Fajr prayer and the Maghrib prayer. فَإِنَّهُ يَنْبَغِي أَن تُؤَذِّنَ فِيهِمَا وَتُقِيمَ. It's appropriate that in those you do the adhan and the iqama. Now, yambaghi is the best equivalent that comes to my mind, is it's appropriate. This is what's appropriate. Now, it's always appropriate to do adhan and iqama. We just had, and then the imam said, if it doesn't matter, you're pressed for time, then only do the iqama. Okay, so when it says it's appropriate, it's suggesting, after saying, having said that, is that this is so important, even if there is a matter that's important that you may lose that. Now, not life and death situation, obviously, but you consider it important. For whatever reason, it is important. The imam didn't say that it's got to be something wajib, something you consider important. If you consider it important on other prayers, okay, don't do adhan and iqama, just do iqama. But for fajr and maghrib, let that allow whatever other thing you have to be lost, yafut, lose it, but don't lose the rewards of adhan and iqama. Do the adhan and iqama for maghrib and fajr. Why fajr and maghrib? How did, what's the significance of these two? I'm not sure if the explanation is really the significance. It's an additional point related to these two that tell us these two prayers are, in a certain way, it's important not to cut them short. Okay, I think that's the best wording I can give. What is that explanation? The Imam says, فَإِنَّهُ يَنْبَغِي أَن تُؤَذِّنَ فِيهِمَا وَتُقِيمَا مِنْ أَجْلِ أَنَّهُ لَا يَقْصُرُ فِيهِمَا كَمَا يَقْصُرُ فِي سَائِرِ الصَّلَوَاتِ. See, when you travel, the other prayers, you cut them short. Four rak'ah prayers, dhuhr, asr, isha, you cut them short. But the fajr and the maghrib, you don't cut them short. Fajr prayer doesn't become one. Maghrib doesn't become one and a half or one or two. It remains. So you don't cut those two prayers short. Again, that's not an explanation. What is the significance? It tells us of a ruling regarding cutting them short. The Imam says, you see that there? Okay, that gives you an understanding, for you to understand that there is a logic behind and a reason and something regarding these two prayers, that God didn't want them to be cut short. So with their adhan and iqama, don't cut that short either. Now, having completed that, again, we mentioned at the beginning of the session, it's important that we don't take things out of context. You read this hadith, if you only look at this hadith, you would say, well, if you're doing a congregation, it's wajib to do adhan and iqama. So if somebody stands to lead the prayers and he says, I'm pressed for time, I cannot do adhan or iqama, Allahu Akbar, oh, this prayer is not valid. Or if he stands to do it and he says, I'm pressed for time, or he doesn't say, he just does iqama. Okay, like, oh, that the imam said, la yujze, it's not sufficient. You have to do adhan and iqama. This is taking hadith out of context. Adhan and iqama, from every wording that we had here already in this particular chapter, this is not all the hadith related to adhan and iqama. These are only talking about the beginning of adhan and iqama, the value of them, and the rewards for them. That's all it's talking about. That's in terms of the understanding of Sheikh Khulaini. He has compiled hadith that in his mind, in his understanding, are related to these themes. Okay, it doesn't talk about other aspects. So we can't conclude that based on the wording in the other hadith in this chapter, which emphasized the rewards for it. When it's only wajib or when it's necessary, then you have hadith about what happens if you don't do it. There's adab, there's this, like salah itself. If you don't do prayers, there's all these different negative consequences. We don't have that here. There's only encouragement to do that. That's itself an indication, but there's also other hadith. It's not wajib. So this hadith is basically telling someone who is interested in mustahabbat and wants to know where there's more emphasis. So this is what you have. There's more emphasis for jama'ah prayers. Even if it's just two people that are doing a jama'ah prayer, the imam says, definitely do the adhan and the iqamah. The context of the discussion is the context of discussing a mustahab act. So it being sufficient or not sufficient is talking about what the best way of doing it is and what the way that it's not as good or here you're allowed to. It's all in the context of something that you are allowed to skip on entirely. Okay. It's not wajib at all. But if you're looking for yourself to do more, to be trained more, the imam says for jama'ah prayers, adhan and iqamah. For other prayers, again, also adhan and iqamah. But if there's something, not life and death matters, but something that you want to do, and if you do adhan and iqamah, you miss it, the imam says, okay, in those cases, do iqamah only. If it's life and death, obviously, just leave the salah even. If it's a life and death, there's no time for salah. You have to go, if you're saving someone, you're saving your own life, salah is not wajib unless you are in a situation that you can do or you're supposed to do salah while you're running or while you're walking or while you're doing whatever you're doing. Okay, in those conditions, which are rare conditions. But if in those matters, somebody's in the hospital, whatever, well, salah, at that point, you have to do the qadha, right? Then you can't do it. You have to cater to that other important life and death matter. This is talking about something that is important for you. You don't want to miss. If I do adhan and iqamah, I'll miss that. Okay. Imam says, okay, in those cases, do the iqama only, except for maghrib and fajr. For those, sacrifice that other thing. If it's not a life and death issue, not that important, something that's important for you, but it's not that important, this is more important, and sacrifice that. Do your adhan and iqama. This is what we learn from this hadith. Okay, next hadith we have is hadith number 10. Abu Dawood, عن الحسين بن سعيد عن فضالة عن الحسين بن عثمان عن عمر بن أبي ناصر. A number of these people I have to do research on. I don't remember them. Abu Dawood in this طبقة, I can't remember whose kunya that is. And Hussein ibn Sa'id, I know Fadala is Fadala ibn Ayyub. Probably Hussein ibn Uthman, we know him. Amr ibn Abi Nasr, I'm not sure of. I don't remember. I don't recall that name. Anyhow, let's look at the hadith. قال قلت لأبي عبد الله عليه الصلاة والسلام. He says, I said to Imam al-Sadiq صلّى الله عليه, أيتكلم الرجل في الأذان في الأذان. Is it allowed for a person to speak during adhan? Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. And then he says, this person, can you grab me a cup of water in my throat? I need to do this or no, or this child is doing this or whatever it is. Talk to someone. Can I do that? قال لا بأس. There's no problem. لا بأس means no problem, no issue. قلت في الإقامة, what about إقامة؟ قال لا. Imam said, no. Now this, as I said in the chain of transmission, I don't know, I'll have to do research to see if there's anyone that's a liar amongst them. I strongly doubt that. These are probably people that, worst case scenario, we haven't heard anything positive or negative about, and therefore, in our view, it'll be trustworthy. But let's say, that they were people that there are people, one of those that I don't know, I don't remember their names, that perhaps there's someone that are liars, for instance. Let's say, al-a'udhu billah, God forbid, it's very highly unlikely. But anyway, let's say, hypothetically, it would have been. What is narrated here can be backed up with other evidence, other hadith, that part of them we will read, and therefore the context, we know this is true, this is right. We have other hadith, other chains of transmission. We've heard it through other sources that the Imam has said this. So the Imam has said this. Now, whether these people are reliable people or not, the content and what they're transmitting to us, or what's been transmitted to us through them, is something that's been authenticated through means of checking other sayings and other chains of transmission. So during adhan, you can talk. Now again, is this the context is mustahabbat. This doesn't mean that you're saying iqama, you're about to begin the prayer, you say something, then all your prayer is invalid. No. Or it's wajib to go back and start. No. The whole thing is mustahabbat. Yes. If you're doing the iqama, now we have other hadith related to this, and there's fatwa. I can tell you that with more certainty, as we've read the fatwa hadith. Again, you have to read all of them to be able to say this is everything that we have in hadith. Now, fuqaha, jurists, the reason why I can quote that fatwa, they do look at all the hadith. Now, I may have not read every single hadith related to that topic, but that faqih who has, probably has looked at all of the hadith related to this. The fatwa is, if you speak between the lines of the iqamah, then if you want the rewards of the iqamah, you need to restart your iqamah. Okay, that iqamah is something that is like prayer, it's not prayer, but it's like prayer, in that you're not supposed to say things between. If you say something between the lines, then the iqamah is gone. Now, does that mean that I should stop saying the rest of it if I spoke? No, you can continue saying that. The best case scenario is that during iqamah, you try your best not to say anything to anyone. Don't speak, and some other lines that we have there. If something came up, you had to say something, or you felt like it's better if you say it, you say it. Afterwards, you can continue, okay? But if you have time, the best case scenario is restart that. If you can't restart, or you shouldn't restart, there's reasons why you should, that's fine, it's all fine. You can continue doing that. This is the context of this explanation, is the context of mustahabbat. So the better thing to do here is to not speak during iqamah. Okay. Next, hadith Ali ibn Ibrahim an abihi an ibn Abi Umayd an Hammad an al-Halabi. We had this chain of transmission, I won't speak of it. قال لا بأس أن يؤذن الرجل من غير وضوء. According to the account, al-Halabi says, قال, one point regarding this, it doesn't say which imam. Halabi usually narrates from Imam al-Sadiq salamullah alayhi. There's a discussion, a debate, in usul, and also in a sense in kulliyat al-rijal perhaps, and in fiqh generally, this is all of that combines, gets combined in fiqh. What happens, you have, this is called mudhmar, qala, who qala, who has said this, it's a masculine third person singular pronoun, he. Qala means he said. Who's he? Who's this referring to? Do we trust this? Do we not trust this? There's various views. It's pretty evident, pretty obvious, for so many different reasons, that Halabi is not just saying some random person said this. This is found in books of hadith. Kulayni finds it in a book of hadith. That book of hadith was either transcribed by the person who heard from the imam, and he only transcribed those things he heard from the imam, or it's taken from another book which is like that. So these are hadith. It's from the imams. And Halabi narrates from Imam Sadiq. This is from Imam Sadiq, salamullah alayhi. قال لا بأس أن يؤذن الرجل من غير وضوء. There's no issue, there's no problem in a person. A rajul is generally, I mean, it means man, but generally we have said a number of times it means a person. In the case of adhan, we'll have to think about that a little more, because we will come to hadith related to adhan in the context of women, okay? There's something particular to women in the discussion of adhan and iqamah. We'll get to it, inshallah. But from my understanding, we'll get there and we'll see that as far as at least I understand, those hadith don't change the status on this, okay? Adhan, if a person wants to do adhan, do they have to be in the state of wudu? No. In other words, you can call the adhan and then go make wudu. You call the adhan for, not just for the heck of it, I'm sorry to use that language, but you don't just call the adhan. Adhan is the beginning of a process of prayer. You call the adhan, then the iqama, and then prayer. Okay. Now, why would you do adhan without wudu? Many times the time comes in, we're doing congregation or whatever, they ask me to call the adhan, or I want to call the adhan. There's so many rewards in being the one who announces the adhan. Now, I get an opportunity, and I'm like, I don't have wudu, what should I do? The imam says, there's no issue, call your adhan. Allahu Akbar, Allah, you finish the adhan, now rush, make your wudu, and come back, okay, to the prayer. What about the iqama? The imam, according to the hadith, says, وَلَا يُقِيمُ إِلَّا وَهُوَ عَلَى وُضُوءٍ. But the person will not do iqama unless they're in wudu. Okay. You should have, if you start the iqama, you should already have wudu. Don't do your iqama if you haven't made wudu yet. It's not like adhan. Don't say, okay, I'll do the iqama, then I'll go make wudu, and then I'll start the prayer. No. Start the iqama after having made wudu. And if you're in a congregation, someone is to call the iqama, because that's legitimate. It doesn't have to be the imam that calls the iqama, someone else. If you're in a crowd, somebody called the adhan, now they're calling someone to do the iqama, and I think, let me do it, but I don't have wudu. No, don't do that. Let someone else do it. You go and make your wudu. So you make your wudu, you rush back, and you either get there while the iqama is still not finished, or the prayer has started and you join that prayer. You shouldn't be the one who does the iqama because you don't have wudu. Again, this is in the context of mustahabbat. Is there a problem for a reason? I'm in a part of that crowd. I'm with these people. They called me and said, can you do the iqama? And I'm debating within because I know I don't have wudu, but I also know I can't join this congregation. For whatever reason, I have something to do, I have to leave, but I do have time to do the iqama. Can I not do the iqama for them? Yes, there's nothing. It's not like, oh, that iqama doesn't count because he didn't have wudu. That's not what the imam says. The imam is talking about you as a person who's going to do the prayer, okay? The sequence should be like this. You can do the adhan before you've even made wudu. Now, you want to do the iqama and then you're going to pray. Should I do the iqama first, then make wudu, then pray? Or make wudu and then iqama, and then pray? Imam says, no, don't leave a gap. Now we will come and see. There shouldn't be a gap between iqama and the prayer period. Okay. Not that as soon as you say, la ilaha illallah, not even a split second say Allah. No, the idea is don't do anything in between them. Okay, and we have hadith, we'll get to it, that the iqama is the beginning. You've already started the prayer, as the hadith says. So this is what hadith says. Next hadith, Ali ibn Ibrahim an Abi an Salih ibn Sa'id an Yunus an ibn Muskan an Abi Basir. Except for Salih ibn Sa'id, the rest of them are very, very well known to me and to everybody. Salih ibn Sa'id, I don't remember him to be able to come. But again, for various reasons, it seems like this would be a hadith that we would trust. Regardless, قال سألته عن الرجل. Abu Basir again. قال, he says, سألته عن الرجل. Now I said again, Abu Basir again. It's not clear if this Abu Basir is the same as the other Abu Basir. Some say there's two Abu Basir. We have two names, Layth ibn al-Bakhtari, and I can't remember the name of the other. There are two names. There's discussions whether these two are one and the same or they're not. It does seem to me, at least, not 100%, but it's highly unlikely, actually, that they're one person. They're probably two people. But they're both, it seems like, if that explanation, which so far we found to be correct, that Abu Basir is referring to the person being blind. So there, I guess, if that understanding is correct, there's two companions that are both blind, but they're both well-known. Now, Some have an opinion that no, whenever it says Abu Basir, it's one very well-known person. There may be another Abu Basir, but when he's mentioned with his full name, not just the kunya. When only the kunya is mentioned, it refers to that one person. Anyhow, they're both reliable. So whether it's that same person or not, there's some discussions, but Abu Basir is a reliable person, regardless of there being two or one, and this one being that one more well-known one or the other, they're both reliable, based on the research that we have done. Anyhow, قال سألته, he says, I asked him, عن الرجل ينتهي إلى الإمام حين يسلم. I asked him about a person who reaches the Imam حين يسلم. The Imam is saying, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله, or السلام عليك أيها النبي ورحمة الله. He's finishing the prayer, basically. He reaches, ينتهي إلى الإمام حين يسلم. When the Imam is saying, السلام, finishing the prayer. قال, the Imam says, ليس عليه أن يعيد الأذان. It's not on him to do the Adhan. Okay, he doesn't have an Adhan. There's no Adhan on him. Adhan was in itself a mustahab act. Okay, it was never an obligation. So when it says it's not on him, it means that, as the ulama have, fuqaha have understood, and so far it seems like that is a legitimate understanding, that it means that there isn't an adhan. You shouldn't, in other words. It's not like, okay, you know, you can do it, but you don't have to. Well, I never had to anyway. It's in the context of a mustahab thing. لَيْسَ عَلَيْهِ أَن يُعِيدَ الْأَذَانِ. Okay. And then when you read the rest of it, that becomes more clear. That's what the Imam is saying. You shouldn't do the adhan. فَلْيَدْخُلْ مَعَهُمْ فِي أَذَانِهِمْ. Then he should enter with them in the adhan. It seems, that's not the wording of the hadith, but putting the other hadith that we have in regards to joining the congregation. You know, we have a number of hadith on that, and also based on that, the fatwa of the ulama, how important it is to join congregations. And the importance of joining that congregation is such that, based on the hadith, the fatwa of our ulama is that if you get there and the imam is in his tashahud, he hasn't completed, but he's about to complete his prayer. Okay, the prayer, there's just a tiny bit left, but not a rak'ah. It's recommended for you to go and stand there, say Allahu Akbar, and sit in that halfway position on your knees, and do or join that tashahud, that last part of the prayer, although it doesn't count as a rak'ah, it's only to gain the rewards of that jama'ah. Okay. Seeing those other hadith, it seems like this wording here, فَلْيَدْخُلْ مَعَهُمْ فِي أَذَانِهِمْ. Enter with them in their adhan. You're, in other words, joining that congregation in being part of that adhan. One adhan was said for their prayer. Me getting there and doing my prayer without the adhan, I'm relying on their adhan. I have joined that congregation's adhan. It's important to do that. فَإِنْ وَجَدَهُمْ قَدْ تَفَرَّقُوا أَعَادَ الْأَذَانِ. And this is where we said it becomes more clear, where you should and where you shouldn't. Okay, you shouldn't in that case. But if he sees, yes, there was a congregation here, but not only has the imam completed and done his salam, but قَدْ تَفَرَّقُوا, the jama'ah has dispersed. They're no longer a congregation. Yeah, there may be people standing, sitting, conversing, having conversations. They're still around. There's still, in a sense, a congregation, a group of people standing there, but they're not in the state of prayer or sitting and doing ta'aqib after the prayer. They're completely done. They've moved on. They form small groups here and there, having conversations or general group discussion, but they're not a congregation of musallin, of people praying. In that case, adil adhan, then it's entirely done. If they're there's nothing to join. The adhan is, you know, you have to, you should do your own adhan. Okay, I guess we didn't get to that other scholar that we mentioned, that other person that we said we'll get to, and we'll talk about Yunus ibn Abdul Rahman and that other companion, inshallah, maybe some other session. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to illuminate our hearts with the light of the Qur'an and the living Qur'ans and their words, the Ahlul Bayt salamullah alayhim ajma'een.